ॐ जननीं शारदां देवीं रामकृष्णं जगद्गुरुं पादपद्मे तयोः श्रित्वा प्रणमामि मुहुर्मुहुः। ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः हरिः। ॐ
ॐ मे ब्रह्मन् प्रोटेक्ट अस बोथ। May Brahman bestow upon us both the fruit of knowledge. May we both obtain the energy to acquire knowledge. May what we both study reveal the truth. May we cherish no ill feeling toward each other. Om, peace, peace, peace be unto all.
So we have been discussing the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, and in our last class we have seen the meaning of the Shanti Patha. What did we see? This is a very special Shanti Patha. This is a Mahavakya. Unlike other Shanti Pathas, in this Shanti Patha, there is no prayer. Lord, kindly remove all the obstacles, remove all my bad qualities, endow me with all divine spiritual qualities, let there be no difference of opinion between my teacher and myself. We have seen in this very Upanishad, rather in Taittiriya Upanishad, how there seemed to be a perceived difference between the teacher and the Shishya, student. It looked superficially read as though the teacher got angry. It is possible sometimes the teacher and the student do not see eye to eye, as we say. No, let such a thing not happen. So that is also included. But in this particular Shanti Patha, what exists is only one, that is Brahman, that is Purnam, infinite. And from infinite, there cannot be a origin of something else. So, what seemingly appears to be different from that infinite, what appears to be finite, is a mistake. It is called avidya, maya, it is called adhyaropa. And that is what the Upanishad in the very first section wants to deal with. So, it is a prayer that what is only one. You call it Brahman, you call it the world, it is only Brahman alone. Then why do we not see? Just because we experience something doesn't mean it is different from Brahman. And this is the theme of all the Upanishads. Even when we talk about Narayana Suktam or Purusha Suktam, any Suktam for that matter, Sahasra Sirsha Purushaha Sahasraksha Sahasrapat Sabhumim Vishvato Vritva Atyatishtat Dashangulam. The Lord alone is. But because of the Maya, which is our mind, we seem to see difference everywhere. And as we progress in spiritual life, that differentiation slowly is sublated. Unity is seen. That is the progress from duality to qualified non-duality and finally to non-duality. From Dvaitam to Visishta Dvaitam to Advaitam. And this Shanti Mantra clearly says the whole world is nothing but Jiva. So Jivatma, Paramatma are one and the same. That is the gist of this Shanti Mantra. And three times we say, let there be peace, because there are three sources of troubles. All problems stem from three sources. Our body and mind, that is called Adhyatma, then the external world, Adibhautika, and from the presiding deities, when they are displeased with our ingratitude, that is called Adidaivika. Let such a thing not happen. That is the essence of this beautiful Shanti Patha. Actually, even if someone doesn't study this Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, even chanting this peace chant, Purnamadaha Purnamidam Purnat Purnam Udachate Purnasya Purnam Adaya Purnam Eva Avasishyate. What remains is that one infinite reality, call it by whatever name you call it. And as I mentioned earlier, every Veda has its own Shanti Patha. This Brihadaranyaka Upanishad belongs to Shukla Yajurveda, and so this is the Shanti Patha. But there is something very special here. So this Shanti Patha doesn't actually come at the beginning of the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. So it comes only at the beginning of the 5th chapter. Therein, Shankaracharya has written quite an elaborate commentary upon it. But everybody chants this one. And we also had seen that when we were studying Isavasya Upanishad, there also it is there. Now we enter the Upanishad proper itself, but some introduction is very necessary. Before we enter, we have to know certain things. First of all, we are creatures of this created world. I am a created being. That's why I call myself my body, my mind. I am a Jivatma. I am an individual. And that is universal experience. But the purpose of the scripture, that is Upanishad, that is Veda, is totally different. Really speaking, this Jagat doesn't exist. What does it mean? It is called Mithya. Brahman alone is the truth. Brahma Satyam, Jagat Mithya, Jivo Brahma Eva Na Aparaha. So what does the Upanishad want to teach us? So just like in mathematics they teach, for the beginners they teach one truth. For the advanced students they teach another truth. For example, parallel lines never meet in infinity. That is for the beginners. But the same students, when they are capable of understanding, parallel lines do meet in infinity. Remember, that is for the abstract mathematics. Even I don't understand it. Doesn't matter. But so, we are experiencing the world. So the scripture, if he says the world doesn't exist, we will not believe the scriptures. So they have adopted a method. Yes, yes, yes. The world exists, your experience of the world is very true. And then we say, yes, the scripture is talking sense now. I can understand it. Then it says, but there is some truth about this world, which you know it unconsciously, but consciously you are ignoring it. What is that? That there is something called changefulness. Everything in this world is changing. You are not there before your birth. You won't be there after your death. So you have to know, is this all life that you live for a short time and then you die? And many times we suffer. What is the worth of life? So what is it? We want to live forever and we want to be happy forever. Asato ma sadgamaya, mrityor ma amrutangamaya. How do we know? Because that is the knowledge we have to gain. I have no birth, and if there is no birth, there is no death. And I am Ananda Swarupa. There is no happiness in any object. So same object in our experience. Sometimes it gives happiness, sometimes it gives less happiness, sometimes it gives intense pain. So that is not the, Ananda is not the nature of the object. That we can understand. Then where from the Ananda is coming? If happiness or bliss doesn't belong to the object. Where from is it coming? Because I am experiencing it. It is a fact. Then you say, it is coming from you. Then what does the object do? It merely removes the obstruction of your own happiness, just as you stand in front of a mirror and you put a big veil in front of you. You cannot see your own reflection, not because the mirror is incapable of reflecting, but because of the veil. The moment you remove the veil, or I would put it this way, the more you start removing the veil, the more reflection we are able to see. So avidya is the veil. In fact, Sri Ramakrishna gives this example. One day he was sitting in front of devotees and explaining this truth. See, we are so near to each other. He had a towel on his shoulders, took it out, covered his face. See, you can't see me, even though I am so near. So even though God is everywhere, we can't see because we have covered our eyes with a veil. That veil is called avidya, maya, etc. So ananda is also from us only. And knowledge also is from us, from myself only. So first the scripture accepts. That is called adhyaropa, it is superimposition. Then later on it says, slowly through certain methods, first rituals, then upasanas, then we acquire the qualities necessary to approach a guru. Such a person is called an adhikari. Then the guru teaches him, and then finally he convinces him. This is the truth is, you are that, tattvamasi. But that is guru's teaching. We have to make it our own. Guru says, you are that. We have to say, I am that. For that purpose, first shravana, then manana, remove all doubts. That means acquire 100% faith like Girish Chandra Ghosh. And then only the last thing comes, nididhyasana. Once we are convinced of something, that very conviction will not allow us to do anything excepting what we are convinced of. That is the greatness of conviction, which in Sanskrit is beautifully called Shraddha. So this is the process. So to understand Brahman or the self, one needs a very subtle intellect. So the Upanishad uses this methodology of adhyaropa and apavada. And here we have to know three words. In order to understand this apavada, slowly the Upanishad or Vedanta introduces us to three terms, sat, asat, mithya. Very important. We heard these words many times. What is sat? That which is truth, that which always exists. That is called sat. What is asat? It never existed. It cannot exist. Pure non-existence is called asat. We have to be careful if we want to understand the Upanishads to have this difference. Something that never exists. But there is another word that is called mithya. Many of us misunderstand the meaning of the word mithya. What is mithya? That which we take something as something else. That is what into the Brahma Sutras, Shankaracharya, in 1.5 page commentary, which has been commented in hundreds of pages, which is called the commentary, introductory commentary. It is called Adhyasa Bhashya. Adhyasa means superimposition. Classical example is, there is a rope, but because of the semi-darkness and resemblance and our fear, we mistake it as a rope. And because we are convinced it is a snake, so we get fear. So because we are convinced, I am different from you, everyone is different. So that means there would be fear, there would be loss, somebody can take away from me. Of course somebody also can give me something, but we are frightened somebody else may take away. Life itself can be taken away. How many murders, how many killings, how much beatings, how many tortures are taking place in this world? And is it real? Just like you imagine you are watching all these things that are happening in our day-to-day life. It is a cinema. Same thing happened there also. There also people fall in love, people quarrel, people get married, people get divorced. Everything exactly happens. But we enjoy it. The capacity of the actors and actresses, if they act, and some of them are extraordinarily good, we forget it is an acting and we think it is real, but we never think it is completely real. We are continuously aware, sakshi, that I am watching a cinema, I paid money for it, and therefore for 2 hours I immerse myself, I enjoy it, and I enjoy it because I know it is not true. This is the state of a Jivan Mukta. So he seems to be flowing along with the current of this world. But he knows in his heart of hearts, this is all a big nataka. And the manager of this drama is Sri Ranganatha, Narayana himself. That's why he is called Ranganatha. Ranga means it's a dramatic stage. That is called Ranga. So, we have to be careful. Sat means that always exists without change. Asat never existed. Mithya means we mistake something that is real as something else. And because it is a mistake, mistake will always be corrected. Satyam can never be changed. For eternity, it will be truth only. So, this is the methodology that is used by the scriptures, and that which never existed, called asat, it also is called tuchha, utterly unreal. So in this Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, first the process of creation is given, so that children like us, kindergarten, yes, this is an apple, but what apple? It's made up of wood, made up of rubber. Something like that, appears to be like that, for the purpose of teaching. So this is called adhyarupa, then apavada. We have to understand. Apavada means removal of our temporary mistake. And how does it do that? Neti neti. That also comes in this Brihadaranyaka. Not this, not this. So through the process of adhyarupa, the student is gradually led from what he thinks as real, because he is experiencing it, slowly to higher and higher stages. And how does the Upanishad take it? Take a sadhaka. It doesn't take everybody. It takes only a person who is suffered very much, and seeks, is there any solution? And ultimately he starts believing in God. He prays, let me come to you. At that time, this apavada starts. Then God exists, but you can't all of a sudden, right now, see God. You have to purify your mind. Problem is in the mind. Solution is also in the mind. So this is called Upadesha Kanda. So the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, as I said, first of all, it is divided into 3 parts. Madhukanda, later on it is also called Upadesha Kanda. Second, it is also called Muni Kanda, Yajnavalkya Kanda, where reason is used to convince people who are a little bit intellectual. And third is called Khela Kanda. Miscellaneous subjects are given there, and that also is a wonderful world. Now, in this first process, in this Madhukanda, the world is also divided into 2. That which is unmanifest, that which is manifest. What are we talking about? Just now, we hear the news, a baby is born. But this baby is not in this. Nobody had seen the baby before. Only after it is conceived, maybe through X-rays we can see. But before that, nobody has seen. And we know something cannot suddenly appear. Every effect must have a cause. And a cause is always unmanifest. Just as you take a mango seed and you break it, you don't see anything. I mean, you see something, you don't see mango tree. But put it in the soil and go on watering it carefully and slowly it becomes a seedling, then a small plant, then it starts growing. In 3-4 years, it starts bearing mango fruits. Whatever it is, sometimes sour, sometimes sweet, sometimes very, very sweet, small one, big one, etc. So, everything, every object is called an effect. And every effect must have a cause. Every effect is called vyakta, that is manifest, experienceable. And the cause of every object is not experienceable. As I said, even you can take a banyan seed, that huge banyan plant is there within. Also, we have to be familiar with some other words. Every object is called nama, rupa, karma. Nama, rupa, karma, atmakam, vyakruta, prapancham. Nama means rupa, clay. You give it a form. And after that, you give it a name. You make a pot. So that pot, first pot, call it a pot. You make a second pot. Now, you have to distinguish between the first pot and second pot. So you have to say the small pot, the bigger pot, the square pot, the round pot, the conical pot, etc., etc., to distinguish, because that is called karma. The form is called rupa. The name is called nama. And it is karma. Karma means what? Prayojana, purpose. So therefore, the same wood, for example, if you put it on the floor, it becomes floor. Put it above, it becomes the roof. And you close it, becomes windows and doors. Make it another way, becomes a table. Make it another way, becomes a chair. Make it another way, it becomes a stool. Oh, therefore, according to the need, according to the utility, that utility is called karma. So, every object in this world is a combination of form, rupa, name, nama, karma or prayojana. This is how we are working in this world. We have to be familiar with this. Then we have to be familiar another two worlds. Vedanta divides the whole world into two. Sadhana prapancha and sadhya prapancha. That is to say, I am hungry. Therefore, I must do some sadhana to get rid of my hunger. What is the way? I must procure food. I can cook. I can beg. But I have to get food. The food is called sadhya, to be attained. And the way, that is, I have to do, how I get it, that is called sadhana. Whether it is spiritual sadhana, worldly sadhana, I want a house, I want money, I want a car, I want name and fame, I want power, whatever way, we have desires. Every desire is called sadhya. And the desire can be fulfilled only through one way, and that is called sadhana. We have to adopt appropriate means in order to get the appropriate result. So that is also we have to understand. Why are we talking so much? Because the whole world is there. What is the purpose? I have to deal from birth to death with this world. That means I have to deal with every object. Some objects, they give me happiness. Some give me unhappiness. Therefore, the objects which are likely to give me suffering and unhappiness and suffering I have to avoid. For that also I have to do sadhana. Certain things, they give me pleasure, happiness, joy. For that also I have to do sadhana. But what is it? Everybody wants unbroken life. Nobody wants death. Nobody wants to be ignorant. And nobody wants to be unhappy. That is why that very prayer, we will soon see in this very Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. They are called Abhyaroha Mantras. But that is prayer. That is my unfulfilled desires. I want to live forever. I want to be knowledgeable of everything. And I want unbroken happiness called bliss. That is the sadhya, the goal to be attained. And if there is a goal, if there is a desire, it is an inevitable rule that we will have to do. Sadhana exists. If there is a sadhya, there is a sadhana, the means of achievement exists. If there is a means of achievement, the desired end also must exist. Therefore, it is very important. Now the Upanishad wants to take us. Are you happy in this world? Yes, I am very happy. Then Upanishad is not for that person. Are you happy? Sometimes I am happy, sometimes I am unhappy. So do you want always to be happy? Of course, everybody wants. I also want it. Then there is a way. You do this, don't do this. That is called Vidhi and Nishedha. That is also. Then if you follow, you will do that. Yes, now I get more happiness. And we have to note down here, nobody can remove unhappiness forever, even it exists in the same proportion as happiness, not less, not more. So, soon man learns, even if I follow all the directions of the scriptures, the birth and death cannot be avoided. But the desire to overcome death doesn't immediately flash in this person's mind. He says, even if I have to be born, I want to have higher happiness. So, he starts believing the scriptures after some time, of course. And he says, there are higher worlds and I want to attain to those higher worlds. What is the way? So, perform certain rituals. Swarga kamo agnihotram juhuyat. A person who wants to go to Swarga. What is Swarga? A place of higher happiness for a longer duration of time. For that purpose, there is a ritual called Agnihotra. One must do that Agnihotra, and if one does it correctly, the result is guaranteed. Like when a person does exactly a scientific experiment, he gets the exact result. And that is the Shastra. And this person, he believes in it. And he understands it. He accepts it. He does it. Then, after certain number of experiences, as Bhagavad Gita tells so beautifully, Kshine Punye Martyalokam Vishanti Evam Trayi Dharmam Anuprapannaha. So, Bhagavad Gita says, if you do these scripture commanded rituals, you will go to higher lokas. But because they are all the results of certain karmas, and karmas are limited, their effects are also limited. Kshine punye, as soon as the result, punya, is exhausted, they will have to come down again. So a person says, I want to go again to that hotel. And then, after some time, he becomes more purified, because these rituals, unconsciously, indirectly, they are slowly purifying that person's mind. We have to understand that. And then he understands. The same scripture which is taking me to heaven, the same scripture is telling, you don't need to go and come down. You go and stay there permanently. That is called realization of God. You become one with God and you will be eternally happy, infinitely happy. Then slowly the longing comes. Takes time. That's called evolution. And then, for that purpose, you have to do sadhana. And for that purpose, you require to acquire certain qualities called spiritual qualities, and you have to get rid of certain other what are called demonic qualities. For example, attachment to the world. You love the world. Loving and attachment are opposite sides. You can love, but you can be detached. But if you are attached, that is not love, that is slavery. So slowly, this person understands, and what Shankaracharya put it, and I think nobody can put it so beautifully, says a person becomes adhikari. Adhikari means he becomes fit to receive the instructions from the teacher. His mind becomes mature. Otherwise, it is useless. That is why Sri Ramakrishna used to tell some people, go and enjoy the buildings and the gardens. Not because he did not want to kick them out. No, no. He wanted, even if you come here, you will get bored. I also will get bored. It is wasting your time, wasting my time. Of course, when Sri Ramakrishna is speaking with some other people, there is no question of his wasting time, because the people who sit there without listening, without understanding, or even trying to sleep, Sri Ramakrishna is not losing anything. Even if there is one person who is listening, and 99% were only sitting there, not listening, Sri Ramakrishna's time is not wasted. But the atmosphere becomes polluted. That is, we don't see that. That's why we have to cultivate satsanga. So this person approaches a guru, and what does the guru do? Don't think straight away he is going to initiate the disciple into Mahavakya. We have seen it in Prashna Upanishad. You live for some time with us. Then we will see. In many other Upanishads also we have seen. Some Upanishads, of course, straight away, even without mentioning Guru Sishya, start teaching Isavasya, then Mandukya Upanishad. But Mundaka Upanishad, if you take, so Brahma taught it to his son, and his son taught it to his disciples. Like that it goes on. So we have seen Katha Upanishad. Yamadharmaraja himself was the guru. Nachiketa, he was tested. Then only he was accepted. So we have seen Chandogya Upanishad. In all the three important chapters, 6th, 7th, 8th. 6th chapter, for example, we have seen how the Shvetaketu was taught good lessons. First he was scolded, then he became humble, we hope so. And then his own father started teaching him the highest Vidya. Similarly, we have seen in the 7th chapter, Sanat Kumara started teaching Narada. And in the 8th chapter also, we have seen how Prajapati had kept Indra 101 years. What a marvelous thing for us to understand. But if anybody comes like Narendranath, who came to Sri Ramakrishna, or like Nagamahashaya, Sri Ramakrishna will immediately want to pass on the highest knowledge, because he understands these people are ready to receive. They are like highly cultivated fields, ready to receive the seed at the right season. So, we see that Guru wants to, how does he do it? He develops certain techniques. Now, as a married person, grihastha, these people are supposed to have gone through these physical rituals called karma kanda. But before entering into the jnana kanda, there is a bridge which connects the karma kanda with the jnana kanda. That is called upasana kanda. That is where the teacher also, to some students at least, this upasana is very important. Now, what is this upasana? Upasana is, first of all, there are certain ideas about upasana we have to understand. First of all, upasana is a mental process. It is called mental contemplation. And what is that contemplation? That you take any familiar object, however small it is, and impose upon it some of the biggest ideas. For example, Shivalinga. For example, Saligrama. For example, a Yantra. For example, a cross. The cross. What does it represent? That breaking up of the egotism. You just imagine a huge vertical line and it is crossed. What is that vertical line? I. What is that cross? Not me. Let thy will be done. Jesus Christ had first cried out, if possible, please pass on this cup. Cup means suffering to somebody else. But he understood. That is not the Father, will of the Father. Immediately he said, let thy will be done. Similarly, we also have to accept. Let thy will be done is a marvelous concept. It is, we reduce our egotism. As I mentioned so many times, in front of every Hindu temple, there will be a flag pole that is called Dvajastambha. That represents the ego of all of us. Everybody has to give up his ego there. Only then when he goes inside, that will be called properly Darshana. So this is how all of us have to give up. What does this upasana, mental contemplation, do? That, oh Lord, everything is you. Everything belongs to you. In fact, there is nothing else excepting you. That should be the realization. So, the guru teaches. You take guru himself. He's an ordinary person. But even the guru cannot be taken straight away as an ideal. First comes mother. Marvelous idea we have seen in the Shikshavalli, 11th chapter, Matru Devo Bhava, Pitru Devo Bhava, Acharya Devo Bhava, Atithi Devo Bhava. We have seen how it works. So what does it mean? It means the nearest object nearest to us first is mother. Not that every mother is a Brahmagnani. Every mother is a Jagadguru. No. But I have to impose that idea. So far as I am concerned, without her, I would not have been. Whatever I am is because of father, mother, teacher, etc. Therefore, first practice on one person, one object, that is the mother. We see the Ramakrishna advising Holy Mother that all those things offered in the Kali Puja, your sari, etc., offer it to your mother. But when you offer, do not offer to her as your ordinary mother. You must consider her as Mother Kali herself. So this is what is called Matru Devo Bhava. Let your mother be Brahman to you. And then once we succeed after some time, then expand. First one person, then it must be second person. Who is the second person? Of course, Father. He is the protector. He is the provider. He is everything for us. Therefore, Father is the closest, not as close as Mother, but next to Mother, he is the closest person. We are what we are because of the union between Father and Mother. Therefore, so the Father should be looked upon as Brahman. I hope you are getting the point. If we look at our mothers and fathers, they are just ordinary persons, most of them. It is quite different. Sri Ramakrishna's father and mother, highly evolved souls. That is a rare exception. But mostly it is our father and mother. Ordinary people, like anybody else. Sometimes they may be also spiritual people, quite advanced in spiritual life, but that is a very great good fortune to be born to them. But mostly the idea is, it is a target practice. I decided to look upon my mother as divine mother. In fact, you meditate upon her, your own mother, and probably you may be afraid to jump into the lap of Holy Mother. But you won't hesitate. You can imagine you are a child, how many times you jumped into the lap of the mother. you touched her. So imagine Holy Mother is slowly transformed herself into our own mother, and then you jump. But now the idea is, she is as powerful, as gracious, like Holy Mother. Is that idea? Combine these two and meditate upon. And you will see our meditation, our fear will go away. Similarly, you can merge Sri Ramakrishna in your own father. And you can demand anything of your father, not as of now, but when we were children. I want chocolate. I want to buy that. Baba, I want to that. And he will not hesitate to give you. And you will not hesitate. You don't think, will he give, will he not give, like that. So that is the idea. You will have to think about, this is how. Then the teacher, there are very good teachers are there. And whatever we are educated in, it is all because they passed what they knew. And some of them are extraordinarily talented in conveying what they know in understandable language by us. They are called talented teachers. Otherwise, some teachers know more than other teachers, but they don't know how to convey it to their students. Like the pandit who failed to teach Paniniya Vyakaranam to Swami Vivekananda in Rajasthan. So we have to, now, if we succeeded in looking upon our mother and father, add a third person. That means we are expanding our God vision more and more. And when we succeed in that, now the point you have to understand. Our teacher may be moral, immoral, that's not the point. He gave me knowledge, and in my eyes, he is a Jnanadata. That is the idea. Is a target practice. And then to everybody, that everybody is called Atidhi. Atidhi Devo Bhava. So whenever you meet anybody, anywhere, even now, known or unknown, they have to be looked upon, because it is only God who is manifesting as everybody in this world. That is the essence of Sahasra Sirsha Purushaha. Every head belongs to God. Every hand belongs to God. Every leg belongs to God. Every body belongs to God. Every mind belongs to God. There is nobody who can be separate from the infinity. That is the idea. So that is called slowly expanding our consciousness. For that, slowly our hearts have to be purified. Concentration has to be increased. Identification with the larger whole has to be obtained, and our conduct towards others should be Daivi Sampat. These are some of the qualities which we will discuss again and again and again and again. Otherwise, there would be no progress. So this is the purpose of Upasanas. And here, in the very first chapter, first Brahmana, every section in Brihadaranyaka Upanishad is called Brahmana. Brahmana has nothing to do with the Brahmin or Brahman. It simply means a section. So in this first chapter called Adhyaya, Prathama Adhyaya, so the sections are called Brahmanas. And first of all, we are given the idea of a horse. One has to meditate upon a horse. Ashwamedha Yajna. And why on horse? This is a beautiful subject matter which we will talk about from our next class for some time. Om Jananim Sharadam Devim Ramakrishnam Jagadgurum Padapadme Tayo Sritva Pranamami Muhur Muhuhu. May Ramakrishna Holy Mother and Swami Vivekananda bless us all with Bhakti. Jai Ramakrishna.